Joining us today is Serafina Lalani. She is a veteran innovator with experiences as a venture designer and chief of staff at Houston Exponential, who went off a beaten path despite the chagrin of her parents and potential cultural expectations. Today, Serafina is a vice president of operations at Houston Exponential, a nonprofit dedicated to accelerating the development of Houston's innovation economy that supports high-growth, high-impact startups. We chose Serafina as our guest on this podcast, inspired not only by her achievements in the startup ecosystem, being an Indian American woman, but also by the somewhat unorthodox experiences she's had along the way.
Where did you grow up?
So I was born and raised in Miami, Florida, and Miami is just a melting pot. It's, you know, a lot of Latinx, and just because of the immigration, you know, policies that were that allowed for immigration from all over in the 80s. That was where my parents are. They also came in during that wave, and so they met and got married in Miami. I was born in Miami, and then economic hardships in the 90s brought us to Texas. So I spent a few years in Texas, but I was a bit of a stubborn kid, and I never really saw a future for myself here in the South. And so I only applied to colleges in New England. So the rest of my journey just takes place in, you know, Massachusetts and Boston and Connecticut. And so I spent about a decade in that area, only to come back down to Houston 3 or 4 years ago. Yeah, it's been a bit of a whirlwind.
The South pulled you back.
Yes. Hopefully it did.
Are you, your family still in Houston or in the South? Florida.
Yeah, they're here in Houston. So they live in Sugar Land. There's a large Asian population in Sugar Land, and they really found their home there. And I'm happy to say I have a great relationship with them. And yeah, I still go down to Sugar Land every week. I very much feel those family ties.
Do you have siblings as well?
I am an only child, which is a double whammy, I think. Coming, you know, being the first, being first gen, and first to, you know, attend college and university here in the States, and then being the only child on top of that, it really came with its unique set of challenges and expectations. But yeah, I'm the only child.
So what were some of those expectations that you felt growing up?
Yeah, I think economic stability was like the number one goal for all children that were lucky enough to be, you know, born here in America. So in their eyes, I had two options, which was either go to law school or go to med school. And I did, actually. I ended up dropping out of med school, but I stuck with the program for as long as I could, and then eventually ended up in a very non-traditional career path, to my parents' chagrin, but I think they're finally on board with, you know, the way that things are unfolding, and they find that I'm really happy in the kind of work that I'm doing. And so, yeah, it came with the expectation that I would follow a very traditional path, and I would achieve economic success, and I would have a family and still hold on to my Indian values while doing so.
What's the Indian tradition in your family that you love?
I love going back to India. This is probably something that many other folks in my cohort can relate to. I think a lot of our summers growing up were spent in India, connecting with your grandfathers and grandmothers and, you know, extended families. I also love that no matter how many degrees of separation you are away, like, you're always considered an auntie or an uncle. I think that is just so precious, and I hope to hold on to that for the rest of my life and pass it on to other generations as well.
So on this non-traditional path, how did you manage the expectations that your parents had for you to chase kind of that medical dream that they had for you?
Yeah, it was difficult. There were many years where they were either confused about, you know, my decisions, and I struggled to get their support, but I think it took a lot of communication. And at first, I didn't quite have their support. I think only recently, over the last 1 or 2 years, when they found out, you know, I can actually excel in this field, that I I've won their confidence. But yeah, I think because they lack the language and the understanding of what it means to be a woman in tech, they really couldn't understand, you know, what this pathway looked like or where I would end up, and if I would really have that economic stability at the end of the day, which I think was the number one goal in mind.
My parents probably didn't accept what I did because they didn't understand it. And I get that too. My parents really completely did not understand, you know, what is venture capital? I guess. That economic stability is the almost top thing we have in being in Asian American families as children to attain.
So that non-traditional career path that you took, you're still though in pretty close to the healthcare industry from what we've seen or read.
Yeah, it was a recent divergence from that path. So I attended med school in 2015 and 16 and was learning about disease states when, you know, in reality, I was really more interested in like why there was inequity in certain populations being more predisposed to diseases, and you know what policies can mitigate that kind of inequity, and eventually I obtained an MBA, a master's in public health. Through that coursework, I actually learned that learning about policy and learning about policies and programs and execution can only take you as far as like the business acumen that you develop, in concurrent to that. So I ended up getting an MBA as well. And then by virtue of being in Boston and exposed to the startup scene there, I started working at a small biotech company called Corvus Pharmaceuticals. And in the 6 months that I was there, the company actually went IPO, and I was just addicted. I was so thrilled to be at a company that was growing so quickly and scaling, and everyone was forced to wear multiple hats. It was a really exciting experience for just a young kid out of grad school. So I stuck with startups for some time, only to come down to Houston for my yearly pilgrimage to South by Southwest. So you won't see this on my LinkedIn, but I moonlighted as a DJ for several years. And I came down to South by Southwest for my seventh year in a row, and happened to be here a week early when the tech week was going on, and Houston for the first time had a presence. So I was shocked to learn about that and meet some founders from TMCX and J Labs, and they convinced me that there was a groundswell of activity and you needed to pay attention to it. So I extended my flight probably three or four times before deciding that there was something interesting happening here. And despite what was going on back in Boston, I could probably find a similar or even better experience here in Houston because it's such a nascent community. So stuck around, have been here for about 4 years now, worked my way through healthcare to eventually become specialized in product management. And that really enabled me to work for a couple of, high growth startups here in Houston, and eventually landed at HX, where I'm doing a lot of the same work, but in a different environment now. So working at a higher 30,000 feet view of the entire ecosystem.
How many startups do you work with?
Let's see. So when I was at a management consulting firm for startups called Fractal River, I was working at three or four startups at the same time. And eventually we were brought on to the platform team at Mercury Fund, which is a local fund here in Houston, to help provide support for their portfolio companies. So, through that experience and seeing, four companies with their individual challenges at the same time, feeling very similar pain points that all usually came down to either communication or culture or just like clarity on the roadmap. These were all lessons I learned in a very consolidated amount of time. So it was really a boot camp. I think I learned more at Fractal River than I did in any of my grad school classes.
For sure. So, when you're working with those handful of companies, that's insane. That it's like taking 30 plus hours a semester. That's insane. So what role was it, like a similar role? So it's easier for you, or did you have multiple hats?
Yeah, multiple hats. I've been a generalist for most of my career, so I have the ability to you know, go deep in certain areas, but also have a good perspective on, you know, horizontal skills and, you know, business units. So usually I go deep in go to market, product, and, you know, growth marketing. So those are my three areas where I really excel. But I mean, the special thing about all three of those areas is they're very intersectional. So it demands, you know, just an understanding of how different business units work and how they play together and what enables them and what barriers exist and how to prevent those barriers from really preventing hypergrowth.
What was it that led you to this industry?
Curiosity, I think. So much of the way my career has panned out has just been serendipity. They've been conversations that led to opportunities. So when I first moved to Houston, one of the first people I met was Russ Capper. And Russ Capper at the time had this web series and podcast called High Drive TV. And he was expanding High Drive TV to focus on the health tech segment and the med device segment. And when I met him, I just had, you know, 20 questions on how he was thinking about it, how he's approaching it, what trends was he driven by, and eventually that led to a job offer to spearhead that effort. So through that platform, I really got to meet really interesting founders working on compelling problems, and it led me down this winding path of, you know, meeting other folks that would take me under their wing and upskill me, and led me to what would become my next opportunity. So I would love to say that this was, you know, all part of the master plan. It was not. It's generally just been my curiosity and wanting to meet interesting people doing interesting things. And I think just seeking impact. I think with every new opportunity that has come my way, I think that the impact of that role or responsibility has just been even greater. It's extremely privileged to work on what I work on today.
You know, it's interesting, right? When I hear you talk about your path and you know, serendipity, that just these opportunities that came your way. You know, in the Indian culture, everything is kind of planned and purposeful. And so I'm curious, you know, how did your Indian roots kind of prepare you or maybe hinder you from being able to maneuver or navigate this path?
Yeah. So I'd have to like zoom out to really answer this question with the story of my parents. So both of my parents are entrepreneurs, mostly successful, sometimes struggling entrepreneurs. I've witnessed, you know, the entire whirlwind of you know, their careers through my early childhood. And so all they wanted for me was to have a normal 9-to-5. And all I wanted was to be, you know, my mom and dad would be their interesting, you know, creative pathways. My mom is a wedding dress designer, and she has a background in the arts. And my dad has, you know, a number of, you know, entrepreneurial endeavors, including early education and, you know, small businesses. So I always found what they were working on was very interesting, and the kind of people that they got to interact with. And as much as I didn't enjoy it at the time, but my mom would be, you know, on the phone until 2 and 3 a.m. talking to her like suppliers an ocean away. So that really influenced me. I thought they lived really interesting lives, and I didn't fully comprehend the impact it would have on me until way later in life.
I almost feel like there's a piece here that's where this whole time, you know, what's inspired you maybe is the way that you were surrounded by entrepreneurs. Is it just coincidence now that's what you're focused on? That's where your career has taken you.
I'm trying to wrap my brain around this as well. I think despite the master plan that my parents, you know, had written for me, I followed in their footsteps. I ended up being influenced by their crazy world and, you know, their experiences and wanting to be a part of that I wanted to be in a position where I could enable more success for people like my parents, because I've seen the way that, you know, entrepreneurs can transform not only their individual lives, their families, but their entire communities. And so I'm really driven by the impact that entrepreneurship can have for an entire generation. So I always was motivated by that. despite the grandmaster plan, which is Serafina, go to med school, become a doctor, have a family, get married by 30, all of which I sad to report, I did not hit those metrics. Sorry, mom and dad.
What's your favorite Indian food or drink?
Yeah, there is actually this drink called Burasa that comes out once a year during Ramadan, and it is rose syrup and milk, which doesn't sound too appetizing, but it's just so nostalgic for me. It's just a sweet beverage, and it's the way we mark the conclusion to our daily fast for that 30 days. So I will always cherish Ruasa.
As an Asian woman in entrepreneurship, in that investment world, what are some of the challenges that you've come across?
I could list them for days. I see founders that look like me and come from similar backgrounds as me, and they just have to pass through so many more hoops than other founders to access capital, or talent, or the media. So those three, I think, are major barriers to entry for founders of color. I think some of the platforms that my team and I are working on now at HX, I see them as having an indirect impact on democratizing access. So by removing the layer of direct outreach to an investor, for example, and HX playing that part of being the warm introduction, we create an environment where more people can access capital, where you're forced to just to look at, you know, the pure merit of a company and then the founder and understanding their story and being an advocate for these founders as well.
How have you been able to traverse those challenges? I mean, obviously something's working, you've gotten to where you are. How have you been able to manage and navigate those challenges?
I think something I've been inculcated with when I was a little girl is, you know, just to work harder than anyone else around you. So I think inspiring confidence in people around me by just my willingness to show up and to do the work and to pull the late nights, and that for, you know, the early part of my career really had an impact because I was able to deliver. And because of that, more opportunities and more doors were open for me. And then today, I think in the role that I play, there's a lot of EQ. And, you know, just growing up in, you know, one, being a Muslim woman in a post 9/11 world, I had to understand not only like how to assimilate into different environments, but also being hyper aware of how I was being perceived, you know, for better or for worse. That was something I had to develop at a young age. And so because of that, you know, just having high EQ in navigating any room that I'm in, whether that be in a boardroom full of executives from all kinds of industries, which I have to do so often now, and or, you know, at a dinner table with scrappy entrepreneurs, I feel like I can always find common ground between whoever it is that's on the opposite side of the table. Mm-hmm. So that's really been an enabling force in my life. And also just working harder than anyone around me has also been an enabling force.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a theme though that we've heard is, you know, we work hard as Asian women, and yet, you know, we may be Muslim or Hindu, you know, may not be Christian, right? And so we almost have to kind of hide that, right? Or not bring attention to it, that what makes us different. Do you feel that needs to, you know, if you had to do it all over again, would you do it the same way?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, in the late 90s and early millennium, that was definitely my mindset, that I had to hide this part of who I am in order to just get by and get through. But today I'm really leaning into some of the ethics and the values from my Muslim upbringing, because they're part of my identity. And I think because of the way I was raised, something that I stand by is, you know, who you are affects how you build. And so I lean on lessons like having humility and having a lot of empathy for those around me, and being extremely family driven and having those family values. I think they really impact how I build and how I interact with those around me. So yeah, these are definitely, it wasn't always the case, but it's something that I lean heavily on now, and it's true to who I am.
What would you say, you know, embracing that, your religion, embracing, you know, your being Indian, how do you see that now strengthening your leadership?
I think valuing the things that are different about me encourages me to look for the diversity in opinion and background and values and ethics of those around me as well. So I think the things that are unique about me give me, you know, strength in the workplace, and I believe that to be true for those around me as well. So I'm looking out for in my colleagues, what is it that influences their decision making, or their, you know, how they understand a problem, or how they're navigating a social situation? Because we're all wired a bit differently, but I think, you know, having these diverse backgrounds and opinions just makes everything richer.
Yeah. So
valuing that in myself allows me to value that in others.
Yeah, it's almost like in today's environment, being a leader is actually embracing what makes you different. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Little girl Serafina would not have recognized that, but I definitely see that today.
What's your favorite holiday or favorite Indian holiday?
There's so many. Probably Holi. I know because my parents grew up in a predominantly, you know, Hindu country, they ended up celebrating both Muslim and Hindu holidays. So yeah, they both celebrate Holi, and they, you know, they claim it as, you know, their own and part of their heritage as well. So Holi is just a fun experience and joyous and colorful, obviously. I would say Holi.
What do you feel is the strength that your Indian heritage brings to you?
I would say it's actually an adaptation of that question. I think it might be more of an Indian American characteristic than anything, but I think seeking your own wherever you are. So community building, I think, is something that I've taken from my culture. So I think that just becomes amplified when you're a country away from the motherland, right? So finding your own and having those ties and having strong community you can always, you know, lean back on.
How do you balance the Indian and American dichotomy?
Sometimes I feel like they're both at odds with each other, and it has been my whole life. My Western and Eastern ideologies are always kind of at odds, because my Eastern ideology is telling me, you know, don't be individualistic. You have a family, you're a daughter, you're a mother, you're a sister, you're X, Y, Z before you're anything else. And then my Western ideology is telling me, be extremely career driven and, you know, go after it and aspire to have more and more and more. So I think the way that I balance both of these perspectives is that having work-life balance is really important to me, because carving out time for family is one way to balance that. I think in being individualistic and seeking, you know, professional success, I'm always looking around me to see who else I can bring up. So it's not just a purely Serafina-driven thing, that I'm looking back to see how I can help the community. So yeah, it's a yes and situation, but definitely it's a balancing act, because so many of the values are sometimes direct opposition of each other.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, how do you make the decision for yourself about what's important?
It's a lot of unlearning. I think I used to think through the lens of my family and my mother and my father and how they would interpret my decisions. But more and more, I'm leaning on my own judgment and my own happiness and seeking the balance there.
So what's next for you?
Yeah, long term, I see myself as a hired gun. I come on to organizations when they're very young and early, and help build that infrastructure up. And I love building. So hopefully more of that in the future, wherever serendipity takes me.
What would you say to other Indian women out there who are interested in getting into your field?
Be bold and audacious. I think lots of Indian women are not encouraged to do that. And I would say just go for it. You will never get anything if you don't ask for it. You don't speak up. So that is my advice for young Indian women, I think. Go out there and seek it.
How do you think you're inspiring and creating that for the next generation?
I honestly don't know. I never considered myself as, you know, a role model or, you know, someone to look up to. I've always considered my path very unorthodox. But if anything at all, I hope that this is encouraging for other young women to take an unorthodox pathway. If that means forging it, then forge it. There is no linear pathway to anything, really. I think even in traditional fields like law and medicine, there's other avenues you can always aspire to. So yeah, I think just breaking the mold is definitely something that I hope I can pass on to other generations.
And that you are, Serafina. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Identity Unveiled, we would love to hear from you. Visit us at identityunveiled.org and send us your feedback and nominees for future podcast guests.